Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My name's Catherine Carr, and this is Season 3 of Relatively, the podcast all about potentially the longest relationships of your life.
Oh God, I can't believe I'm sharing this.
I'll be bringing siblings together to talk about the connections they have as adults, as well as what it was like growing up together. This week we're talking to Dr. Nagat Arif, who's a GP but also the resident doctor on ITV and BBC, and her criminal barrister brother, Irfan.
This is his first podcast. Can you hear me? Say hello.
Hello, how are you?
I feel like she's bossing you around even now.
She always does. I've changed the habit of a lifetime.
But I'll also talk to them separately to get a more private take on the relationship.
I was about 5 years old when my parents asked me to, when my mum said to me, you're going to have to look after him, he's your responsibility.
Had it not been for her example, when we were growing up, I don't think I could have gone, you know, I don't think I could have gone on to achieve the sort of things that I have now achieved.
I'm his biggest fan and he knows that.
Brothers and sisters are never straightforward. The family moved to the UK from Pakistan when Nagat was a little girl, allowing her to swap cotton fields for the classroom. Their father's an imam. The longest serving in the country, in fact. A passionate believer in education, she and her equally accomplished brother talk about leaving home, making a new one, dodgy careers advice, sibling respect, the Spice Girls and Tintin. But we really set the tone in this episode by describing their roles in the family before hearing the story of their flight to Heathrow one rainy April.
I'm big sister, mum, dad, friend, all rolled into one. I'm the eldest of five, and that comes with a lot of responsibility. And that is part of being an immigrant family that first came to this alien country many, many years ago.
She is your typical older sibling in the family. She has been very much the third parent for us, for the younger siblings. She set the standards from a young age in terms of, you know, what to achieve and how to achieve it. And I often say this to her, that had it not been for her example when we were growing up, I don't think I could have gone on to achieve the sort of things that I have now achieved.
So if Nagat is the archetypal older sister, what role do you play in the family? Are you the responsible one, the party planner, the serious admin guy? What's your particular groove?
I think I'm probably the mediator in the family.
Oh.
I'm probably the person who you can have a serious conversation with.
I asked Irfan to describe what his role is in the family, and I wonder if you could imagine what he might have said, Nagat.
The Joker of the pack, though. He's not.
Yeah, I wish I was.
Yeah. He's just the most sensible one. That's the only way I can put it. Is that what you said? You were most sensible?
Yeah, I said I'd...
Like the dad. My kids come to you.
I like to think that I'd be the most responsible, like, you know.
Yeah. And this might sound morbid, but it's not really morbid. I've often thought that, God forbid, if something happens to me and my husband, then Irfan would be the guardian of my kids. Like, that's...
Really? That's very nice of you. I
didn't... You knew that, though.
Did I?
Yeah, okay. You did.
Do you have any nicknames for your brother?
No, but they have nicknames for me.
What's the nickname like they them. Got for you? Go on, then.
So, I'm not called Nagat in the house. I'm called Baji. Baji is a word that means sister.
Which is a term of respect in our language, which means dear sister.
If you're older, you never call them by name. So Imran calls Irfan by John, and so forth.
My sister, my older sister, Nagat, is the only one that gets away with calling me Irfan.
Irfan, many, many years ago, shortened that to Barge, which makes me feel like a massive ship. It's not like a barge coming down.
Yeah, it's like a wide load, really.
Yeah, wide load. Then, as a term of endearment, because I won't deny this, I'm a strict sister. When it comes to education and achievement, I am very strict. So that's why I said very early on, I'm the mum and the dad and everything rolled into one. He then started calling me Pops. Oh God, I can't believe I'm sharing this.
Oh, I don't, it's not, I don't really call you Pops. Imran really calls you Pops.
Yeah, then you started to calling
you
Pops.
Then I, but I did.
How many
it,
times have you called me Pops?
I would
me
do
Pops
it just to annoy you then.
You.
I would do it just to annoy you. But
yeah,
I, but my thing has always been very respectful. I always call you Bajie. Barge, you know, when we're having a laugh on a joke, but it's normally Bajie.
Yeah. So I'm known as Barge, a wide load, and Pops, which is basically, yeah, a manly man of the house.
So tell me, how old were you when you came and where did you come from?
I was 9 years old and we came from Pakistan. We're subsidy farmers back in Pakistan. My grandparents grew mangoes and sugar canes and we would sort of swim in the little canals that we used to have. A lot of the time I would have to accompany my mother to the fields and she would pick cotton. So my earliest memory of my brother Irfan is when she asked me to look after him in said fields while she was doing her work. And I was sort of the big sister role, so going, I will look after him and make sure that basically he survives the day.
You must have been titchy.
I was about 5 years old when my parents asked me to, when my mum said to me, you're going to have to look after him, he's your responsibility.
Oh, and as a mum now, does that make you sort of come up a bit short and think, wow?
Yeah, I think the kids these days, I feel like an old person saying this now. Children these days have it so easy. My son, my eldest, is 11, and I still sort of think many, many times and before I have to leave him in responsible of his siblings. I mean, he's brilliant. He's a very sensible 11-year-old. But I've got a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old. And I have to sort of say to him, is this something that he is capable of? He's great at just looking after them. But yeah, those days, it was a whole other kettle of fish.
And so what about your childhood there? Describe it a little bit more. You're on a farm, there's cotton. What else was it like?
I just remember being absolutely free to do what I wanted. I had my grandparents' house, so my dad's family, and then also my mum's family, and they lived in the same village. And a lot of these buildings were mud hut buildings, so it's called 38 Fateh in the Punjab area. We speak Punjabi fluently still now at home. It was lovely being able to have all these groups of cousins who were just also my best friend as well. And then I remember my father. So my father's an imam. He left Pakistan once he got his master's in religious education to lead the Muslim community in Buckinghamshire and Chesham, because there was no imam here at the time.
And then my father would come back to Pakistan and visit, you know, once a year for about a month each time. And over the successive years, I and my younger brother Imran were born.
And he was just this mythical figure in my life. I never really got to know him until I moved to the UK. And then gradually I got to know him as, oh, this is my father.
So my mother then had to leave her siblings and her nieces and nephews and her parents, not knowing whether she would go back or she would return or at what time, when. But she was effectively moving here with a husband who was still relatively a stranger to her.
And my father said to my mum, we're going to England, and it's, and my mother had thought that this was going to be springtime. So he said to her, it's a beautiful country full of greenery. You'll love it there. It's absolutely amazing. So she just thought, fabulous. We're going in April. It's going to be gorgeous weather. So she dressed us all in summery clothes. And I remember having this pink summery dress on with flip flops. And we arrived at Heathrow, and I can't tell you, that it was biblical rain. It was pouring it down. I think there was a miniature flood at some point. That's how it was. My mother's got my other brother, Irfan, and then she's got a cradling, my third sibling, Imran. And she just was, you know, aghast by my dad. She said, I just remember her being very, very annoyed that this was how much rain there was.
She talked about the journey from Pakistan to Chesham when you all moved over to join your dad. I wonder, I mean, you were very, very little, but I wonder if you have any snatched memories of either the journey or early days here, please.
I think I was about 3 years old, 3 and a half when we came here. But I do remember asking my mum, when we came over from Pakistan, did we sort of stop off at a hotel? Because I remember there was a flight, and then we came off the flight, and I just have this vague memory of being a really young boy walking down some plane stairs, because it wasn't, you know, you had to actually walk on the tarmac to get to the plane. And then having breakfast in sort of some kind of weird environment, you know, at that time to me. And she confirmed to me that we did catch a flight from Multan, and we stayed overnight in Karachi and then got a flight from there to Heathrow. And she was really surprised that I was able to remember that.
That is amazing. Now then, how did your life change then? If you were 9-year-old Nagat, you were, you know, roaming free with a gaggle of cousins and swimming in irrigation ditches and eating mangoes or whatever. And then you arrive, what, in the home counties in England? How did your life change?
Well, firstly, it just rained. Like, this country is not friendly with the weather. But I didn't care. Oh, my goodness. It was just this amazing adventure that we had gone on. And I had my siblings with me. But it was just more the fact that I would be sent to school was a thing that really sort of made me so happy. Back in Pakistan, traditionally, girls aren't sent to school. Unfortunately, that is still the case in some village areas at the moment. My mother often tells me how my male cousins would go off to school, and for hours and hours and hours, I would cry and lament the fact that I've been left behind. So she tried to think about how we could move to the city, but then that also became slightly problematic because of safety issues about sending girls to school in the city. And so the fact that I could come to the UK and there's a sense of safety and freedom meant that my father was willing and happy and encouraging me and my mum to go to school was just this immense liberation. And when I got into school, the teachers were so kind and they were willing to teach me this new language. And as long as I nodded my head and I learnt the word yes, very quickly. And the children in the class who also speak Punjabi as well, they were really keen to teach me the language. Dare I say it was mostly swear words that I learned first.
Nothing changes,
honestly. And then I was like, okay, I can't say these words because the teachers would be horrified that I've learned that.
Presumably by the time you started school and followed in Nagat's footsteps, that was all quite sort of normal for you. You didn't have to do that transition that she did from not going to school and crying about it to going to school and being overjoyed. It was just quite a smooth passage for you?
Yeah, I mean, the kids are very resilient. You know, in the early years, they tend to go with the flow. I wasn't coming with this baggage of, you know, memories from Pakistan that my sister was. You know, for me, it was as if my life had started in the UK. And that's all, you know, I remembered.
So your mum, like, despite being slightly misled perhaps about the weather in this country, given that she was keen for you to learn, it sounds like, in terms of opportunity for her female child, that she won overall bringing you here.
Yeah, she was. She was really... I actually reflect back and I think that there's two sides of my mother. She was incredibly lonely when she came here. And before she left Pakistan, she recorded all her siblings and her parents' voices on a tape recorder. Oh. And she would listen to their stories, and we would hear the voices of our uncles and our aunts and our, you know, nana and our nani and our grandparents. And that was our link back to home. But I was getting on with my life in the UK and learning English and getting to know my friends here. But now older Nagat at this age reflects back on that, because I do remember her playing the recordings over and over and over again, because it was a good 4 or 5 years before she went back to Pakistan once we came here. So she was incredibly homesick, and now I recognise that. But also she was really excited that her children were learning something and getting an education, and this was for free. In Pakistan you'd have to pay for an education, so she was getting, her children were thriving. And it meant that slowly over time, unfortunately, inevitably, this gap appeared between us.
Not understanding the culture here, not knowing the language, not being able to have the freedoms that you would associate with when you are a self-sufficient, independent person. She was utterly, you know, dependent entirely on my father. And my father's role was quite demanding, and he was out of the home quite a lot, being a leader in his own community. And so my mother, I imagine with us kids for the first 5 years, must have been incredibly lonely. And I can only recognize that now and see that, you know, which is why we sort of like now do whatever we can to make sure that we're around my mother quite a lot.
Yeah.
You know, she kind of made all those sacrifices in the early years.
Yeah. I mean, imagining sort of 18, 19, 20, 24-year-old your mum, what a selfless woman to see that her children would benefit so hugely from something which was so difficult for her.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she could have dug her heels in. She could have said, no, I'm not leaving my family here in Pakistan. And, you know, why do I want to go to some unknown country where I don't know anybody, don't know anything? And I'm comfortable where I am. You know, she had a very good life there. She was supported by all of her family. And she came from a very large family. Six brothers, six sisters.
Where she had a village to raise a child, literally. Yeah, all that support.
She had all, and so all of that support gone overnight, where she's single-handedly then raising three children, effectively.
There was a gap between the Western ideology and also what she had grown up from Pakistan and the way that girls should behave. And sort of finding that middle ground has been choppy at times, but I think we do pretty well. She's very understanding, but the concept at the time was that the idea is for the girls is to just get to the point where they're 17, 18 or 19. Education wasn't the priority. It was, the idea was that we'll get them married off. We live in a culture in the UK, in some communities, and I'm part of that community, where the parents have this innate feeling, and it's a cultural feeling more than anything, is that you get your girls married off early because that's your farz. Farz is translated as responsibility. So the idea is my parents would have this responsibility hanging over them saying, well, we need to get Nagat married off as soon as possible. Whereas I was very much acutely aware that now I know the words, it's this patriarchy and misogyny. I want to get away from this. And the quickest way to get away from this was to get into education.
Okay. So then when did the idea dawn on you, you know what, not only am I going to come over here, learn English, settle in, integrate, bridge the gap between my siblings and this world as an English primary, middle and secondary school and my home life and my mum as an imam's wife's world, but also I'm going to aim really high. I'm going to be a doctor. When did that happen?
Oh, I'll tell you a really funny story. So I learned English first in the family, and I was the eldest one, so I would have to translate at parents' evening for my parents. Mrs. Pritchard, God rest her soul, she's no longer with us, she said to my parents, oh, I don't think Nagat is going to do very well at all. She came too late in this country. She hasn't caught up with the rest of the children in regards to her level of education that we'd expect for a 12-year-old. And it would be better off if you got her integrated into your community and then do the things that you do, which is, you know, harking back to, she knew very much that in the Asian culture, the community, because she'd seen this with multiple girls that she taught throughout her years, that they would be taken out of education at 17 and married off. And I had to translate that word by word to my parents.
I was going
to
say, was the temptation not to be like, Mrs. Pritchard says I'm excellent.
I'm amazing. Yeah, I'm going to be the Prime Minister, Mum and Dad.
Well, you could be this week, let's be honest. God, you could step right. So I'm sure the call is coming this afternoon.
Yeah, so, God, crazy times. But I'm such an honest individual, and so I happily translated that to my parents.
You.
And my father then cajoled me in the car later on, saying, oh, don't worry, we'll still marry you off. And that's sort of instilled this anger and annoyance, going, but don't write me off, don't write me off. I'm 12, 13 years old. Just don't do that just yet.
This season of Relatively is sponsored by Find My Past, the online home of the 1921 census. By 1921, people from all over the world had begun arriving in Britain to start new lives. People like the remarkable Dr. Harold Moody. Jamaican-born, Dr. Moody graduated top of his class studying medicine at King's College London and set up a practice working from home after struggling to find a job. Perhaps there's an inspiring story in your past. Find out in the 1921 census, exclusively available online at findmypast.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Can you remember any, maybe this is back to the farm in Pakistan, or maybe it's back to the early days in Chesham, I don't know, but maybe music or food or some sort of tethering thing that would remind you of family life?
The thing that me and Erfan bonded over, get this, was Tintin. You know the Tintin comic books?
Yes.
Oh my goodness, we loved Tintin comic books and then Asterix afterwards. So when we were younger, we would share the Tintin books together because we'd go to the library. We had our one visit on a Saturday. Our mum would take us because she'd learnt the route to the surgery, which was on the way to the library. So she'd realised that that's a route that she could do because she couldn't read like any names of streets and stuff. And so when I learnt to read, gradually my brother learnt to read.
I remember getting into Tintin, Snowy the Dog and Captain Haddock and, you know, Calculus, Professor Calculus and all that kind of stuff. I remember getting into those books quite early on and as a way to improve my English, but with pictures.
And actually for his birthday, when I think he was when he was 30, we got the complete set of Tintin books for him. And I guarantee you he's not opened one of them. But
he's too busy being a criminal barrister.
Yeah, he's too busy. But that was our childhood thing that we bonded over.
And which I've still got a full set of, by the way, because you know, every now and again when I want to take a trip down memory lane, I do like reading those.
And then the other thing that we really bonded over music wise and he'll hate me saying this, was the Spice Girls. The criminal barrister, he used to love the Spice Girls with me.
Any particular Spice Girl in particular? Did he identify more with Scary, Sporty, Ginger?
Oh goodness, let me have a think. I think every guy liked Ginger. Come on, she's hot.
No, I just remember Ginger Spice being the more outrageous one.
Oh yeah, of course you do. That's you know, what you remember.
She was on the front of the Sun newspapers and things like that, which one of my teachers actually used to read quite a lot when I was at the middle school.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Wallen used to have
that.
Yeah,
I remember that.
But no, I was actually always quite fond of Baby Spice.
Oh yeah. Emma Bunton. Yeah. And do you know what? I've met her. She's a delight.
Yeah.
She was this, I mean, yeah, I feel like she would be the best friend out of them. The others might be better for a good night out, but I feel like she'd be the best friend. I don't know. Anyway, Spice Girl psychology is not what we're here for. You say older Nagat looks back at younger Nagat, and you must look back now and think, flipping heck, you know, you've already come from a farm somewhere in Pakistan, which is, you know, idyllic and beautiful, but very different to coming into the education system here, learnt the language, assimilated, and then set your sights high and then put your flipping head down, nose to the grindstone, all the other expressions, and done it. You must sometimes think, where did that resilience and that determination come from?
The resilience came into the fact that I will make the best of what I've been given here in the UK. And the other bit of the resilience came from the fact that I come from a community and a culture which unfortunately still persists, though we have a lot of misogyny and patriarchy, and the way to get rid of the shackles of that was to make sure that I got an education. Education was my freedom. It was my freedom to sort of kick back at that a little bit. There's a rebellious part of me. Mm. It was also the idea that I want to be independent. Wherever I go, I'm known as the imam's daughter before I'm known as anything else. Mm. I don't mind that. I adore that. I adore my father's work and his leadership and his spirituality. And we're very, very close. But I wanted to be an individual in my own right. And to get a title which goes beyond my gender. So when you're a doctor, you're not a male or female, you're just a doctor. And that's how I felt. When I was at the Mizborn School, we did a careers fair at 14, 15. So I went to the careers teacher and said, what career can I do that will mean I'm in the longest time in education so my parents don't feel pressured by fuzz to get me out the house? And also, I've got a good excuse to say, but I'm having an education. And he looked at it and did this algorithm and he said, Nagat, you'll make an amazing undertaker.
Oh, what? So,
like, what?
What did you say on the questionnaire? I must have said, I said on mine.
I must have said wanted to help people and I was interested in fashion, because I was interested in fashion. So, you know, dressing up dead bodies is perfect, isn't it? And so he then sort of sat me down and said, on a serious note, though, you don't go to a grammar school. You've come very late in this country. The idea that you're going to be able to go to a medical school, because medical school is as prestigious, it still is. Mm. So he was sort of really setting this the tone that this is so unachievable. Let's set the bar really low, young lady, because your hopes will be dashed. But for me, to being told I can't do something was the impetus to say, okay, the challenge is on. Mm. I've got GCSEs and A-levels. I'm going to prove you wrong.
And I'm going to hazard a guess here. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I'm about to talk to your brother, the criminal barrister, that there's a little bit of familial resemblance in Irfan. I mean, just taking a guess there.
Yeah, and we're such great supporters of each other. I'm his biggest fan and he knows that.
We looked at her as the example and she didn't let the family down. You know, I can only imagine now what burden must have been on her young shoulders, that sense of responsibility that she must have had as a young sort of 5-6-year-old moving to this country, integrating into the local schools, and then sort of realizing from a young age, being very focused, very determined, that if she did not set us a good example, then, you know, maybe that would affect how we progressed. Mm.
I think that when you're doing it and you're in the midst of it, you don't realise that you are having to be the grown-up. And we grew up really fast, didn't we, Evan?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember you growing up incredibly fast because you were the first boy. So my father would take him to the mosque and he was the older son and having to take those responsibilities. But I don't begrudge any of that, because I think that's what put us in great stead for our careers later on in life. And we are very much this, I feel like I'm same as I was at university or A-level, probably far more settled now and secure, but I'm the same person, if that makes sense. What about you, Efan? What do you think?
I think fundamentally at our core we're the same people.
Yeah.
But I think really, you know, the way that our lives have panned out, I think that we've got a certain inner strength. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
I think that we're a lot more resilient than most kids or our age, I think, when we were growing up. Now that I can see it in sort of young kids that I represent, I can see that they simply just have floated through life, and they haven't been tested by the realities of life, such as in the ways that we were. And now we're at a stage where we're, I think, a lot more comfortable in our position.
And I think that we as siblings, all five of us actually, we are really close to it. Like tomorrow it's going to be Eid.
Yeah.
And all of us are going to be together. We speak to each other daily on a WhatsApp group. It could be like sending each other stupid things like memes, but whatever we think, we share things constantly. And we do see each other on a weekly basis, despite our really busy family. I don't know whether Efan told you, we literally live walking distance from each other, all of us siblings.
All of
still.
You.
All of yeah. us. Because there's only us as a family here in the UK. All our cousins, our grandparents are no longer with us anymore, but everybody is in Pakistan still.
That is amazing. In a way, it's not lucky for your parents. It's kind of they're reaping what they sowed.
Yeah. Well, do you agree with that, Evan?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, but I also think it's because we ourselves feel a sense of responsibility to them, and I think that they've instilled that within us when we were growing up, and you know we appreciate the sacrifices that they've made over the years, and so we want to now be around for them. It's like, you know, I often think of it sometimes. I was talking to my dad about this, and I said to him often, you know, it's like you ran a business for 25, 30 years, and now you're sitting back and the business is paying you back.
Yeah.
You know, like now you get to relax and you're in your early 60s, mum's in her mid-50s to late-50s, and, you know, for the next 20, 30 years, hopefully you guys are around and you guys can now just sit back and relax.
Yeah, and they put up the grandkids.
Yeah.
Because Afan's got a daughter, I've got three, Imran's got two children, so
they can't relax that much then.
No, but My mum is so great, and because all of us are so close to each other, like, we babysitting is a shared, they always say, you know, a village, you know,
takes a village to raise a
child. It takes a village to raise a child, and that's sort of what we have become in our own little close-knit circles with our kids now. It's almost like they're living in each other's pockets, but very independently at the same time.
And finally, I wonder if you can remember, I asked this question of everybody, and I haven't, because of the sort of slightly different way that your family worked, with you guys being better at English and translating at parents' evening and sort of having that sort of, not authority, but that position. Often I ask about funny rules that parents had in the house, and I'm sure your parents must have had them. I wonder if you can remember any particular rules that maybe at the time seemed serious, but now are like, what's that about, that your parents put in place?
We couldn't go to the cinema. I remember that. Mm. Yeah, going to the cinema, because our parents just didn't see the need for it and didn't understand that that was a thing to do. So I don't remember going to the cinema. Eating out. Do you remember?
I remember the first time that we got a takeout was when you passed your GCSEs.
Yeah, that was the first time.
Dad was like, okay, let's have a KFC or whatever it was. We went and got a chicken bucket. And that was the first time you had a takeout.
I got 9 A's.
Yeah, yeah, you did really well. That's why that merited the takeout.
Getting an A star and 9 A's merited a takeout from the local KFC. Can you believe that? And so the first time I ever went out to eat was McDonald's, and I was 18 at university, and I had to get my friends to help me to order a Mackie D's. Can you believe that? Because we just would never go out. My parents just thought it was
They said home-cooked food.
They still say the same exact. Yeah. Home-cooked food is the best. It's unnecessary. It's unhealthy. It's a waste of money, which completely, you know, now as a mum, I agree with, because I rarely take my kids out or eat. And the other rule that they had was that we could never go to sleepovers, and I agree with that now.
Yeah.
We never went to our friends, and that, I think, was the difference between us and our white friends, because when we were at the Mizborn together, me and Erfan, we were the only Asian brown kids, weren't we? And everybody else was white, and so they'd be like, come over for a sleepover, or we're going to go to this party. So my parents just said no. But weirdly enough, I don't ever remember being upset by that. I was actually quite grateful that I didn't have to go to sleepovers. So movies, takeouts, sleepovers. What else didn't they like us doing? That was it, really. Oh, we had to go to every wedding. Oh, do you remember?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so Catherine, every summer is like wedding season for Pakistani families. We would have to go to all the weddings with all the aunties. And weddings last 3 days. And I remember that used to be so annoying, so problematic. Although the food was banging, was brilliant, wasn't it? Food was always good. So, yeah, having to make sure that we come to all the cultural events and religious events was something that my parents said, you must keep doing. And I think that was their drive to keep us connected with our own culture as much as possible, because they knew that we were getting the Western culture from school. So that was their way of keeping us connected to them.
And it worked.
It has. And now we have the best of both worlds. We're privileged and indulged and very, very lucky, and we know it.
Thank you to Irfan and Nagat, who gets the final word.
I think that the idea that education, which is given to us for free, I keep coming back to this, even with my children now, is such a privilege that my sort of goal was to say to all my siblings, you have to hold on to this and grapple it. So my brother Irfan is a criminal barrister, my brother Imran, so the other baby that my mum had in her arm when she came to Heathrow Airport that many years ago, is now a chartered accountant and works for Heathrow. My sister Sabah is a dentist, and my youngest brother Ali is a paediatric nurse working at Adam Brooks Hospital and has worked throughout the pandemic, looking after sick children.
Oh,
so the fact that we are literally the migrant dream, I'm not embarrassed about that. And I feel very British, but I also feel very Pakistani. But I feel very, very grateful for where I've been able to come and land my roots, and the gifts that I've been given are so precious. So if there's one way that we can give back, being that migrant family, to our communities, is by making sure that we have vocational roles. That means that we can give back freely.
The very last episode of this season is with Tom Ward and his sister Charlie next week. Thank you very much for listening. If you've enjoyed the season, please do rate, review, subscribe, or share it with a brother or sister. Thank you to Tanita Tikaram for letting us use her amazing song. This is a Pocket production, and sound design is by Nick Carter at mixsonics.com. I'd also like to say a huge thank you to our sponsors for this season of Relatively, Find My Past, for digging into their extraordinary records and uncovering the surprising and often revelatory family stories. Find My Past is the only place online where you can access the 1921 census. So if you want to start your family tree or add colour to what you know already, then findmypast.co.uk is the place to do it.
Tradition of love and hate, staying by the fireside. Now the rain may fall, your father's calling you, you still feel safe inside. Although your mom's too proud, your brother's ignoring you, you still feel safe inside. Oh, was it solo? Was it yesterday? Was it true for you? 'Cause while all the rest have taken time, this didn't.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.